another Sunday, another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. And on deck, as usual, we've got Dr. Renee Boyce, and she has some guests lined up for us. So let's say a special good evening to the good doctor. Good evening, doctor.
Hi, good evening, Reston. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. It is so unusual, Reston. I still have not gotten accustomed to not being in studio with you, but I can see you. So I guess that will have to suffice given the circumstances that are currently prevailing in the world.
Like I tell you, they're trying their best to keep you away from me, but that won't last forever.
No, it won't. No, it won't. We won't let it. This evening, as I usually say, I cannot help but say it, but we're going to have a very exciting show. I say it every week, but it's the truth. Last week, if you didn't have the opportunity to join us, we had the Gittins family in and we were discussing dyslexia. It was a very enlightening discussion that we had last week. And if you want to call us, well, not us, if you want to call Grayston in the studio, that would be 434-1790. And remind us of the WhatsApp number, Grayston, 266-4862.
I remember it this way, IVOB, 266-IVOB, whatever IVOB is.
But it's, yes, 266-4862.
Correct.
Yes. You see, this happens when we're not together. But anyways, we press on. So 434-1790 and 266-4862. For those WhatsApp messages. This evening, we have with us two doctors. We have Dr. Linda Williams and we have Dr. Adana Grandison, and they form part of the new BAMP committee. Dr. Linda Williams, good evening, Linda.
Hi, good evening. Hi, yes, good evening Linda to everyone.
Good evening, Linda. Linda is the current president of BAMP. And Dr. Adana Grandison. Good evening, Adana.
Hello, good evening, and thank you for having me.
Yes, Adana is the first vice president. So let me take this opportunity, ladies, to wish you and the other members of the committee my congratulations, and I'm sure congratulations of all the other members in the fraternity, and to wish you the best as you settle on this journey of leading this institution back. Linda, if you can, could you tell us, just for knowledge sake, the other members of the committee?
Certainly. So as you already mentioned, we have the BAMP Council that was elected last Saturday. And I am president. The first vice president is Dr. Dana Grandison. Second vice president, Dr. Jeffrey Lafon. The general secretary, Dr. Ingrid Durant. Assistant General Secretary, Dr. Dawn Grosner-Blackman, the Treasurer, Dr. Gregory Walton, the new Assistant Treasurer, Dr. Vikash Chatrani, the Public Relations Officer, Dr. Sandra Reese, and floor members, Dr. Corinthia Dupuy, Dr. Adrian Waterman, Dr. Manohar Singh, and Dr. Ingrid Burrows.
Right, so again, congratulations to these men and women who have taken up the mantle, as it were, to lead the association. I think one of the things that always happens in any institution, whether it be at national level or any local institutional level, is that there are many people who form opinions, but when it's time, I guess, for positions to be held and sites to be taken, as it were, nobody seems to be available to take on the responsibility. And to lead any association really and truly is an awesome responsibility. What do the letters BAMP stand for? And in answering that, what does BAMP represent? What's the use of BAMP?
Okay, well, thank you again. The BAMP acronym stands for the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners. And BAMP was actually formed after independence. It was originally an arm of the British Medical Association. Before independence, the medical doctors who were practicing in the profession were parts of the British Medical Association. But after independence, in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, in 1970, we had our first local professional organization of doctors, which was called the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners, and Dr. Harold White was the first president of the association. So what does BAMP do? Okay, that was the second part of your question. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, BAMP represents its members' interests, and by professionally associating, we grow stronger as a profession and help to uphold the tenets of the profession among those who practice the profession. And also we are a trade union. We became a trade union also in the 1980s. And as a result of our trade union activities, we also represent doctors' interests as far as a trade union is concerned. We do many other things as well. We participate in many councils with the Barbados government. We have representatives on many, many boards to represent the interests of the medical profession and also to speak to health issues. And this program, this Better Health Radio program, is also an initiative of the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners. So BAMP has lots of influence in many different spheres.
Okay, so Adana, yes, what please. Is your role as the first vice president, and what have you done in order to prepare for this role, apart from accepting the nomination?
Well, firstly, as the first vice president, my primary role is to assist Dr. Williams with any duties she may assign to me, but more importantly, to act in lieu of her absence, really representing not just doctors, but also trying to foster communication and relations with the general public. You've asked what have I done to prepare? Well, initially I would tell you, I was not a member when I first came out of medical school and first transitioned out of internship. However, with COVID-19, I saw the importance of really giving of myself to the cause, lending wherever I could. And because COVID-19 coming upon the scene as a pandemic didn't just affect you or me, it affected everyone. And I think that it was important that we all put our expertise together, our experiences together, and essentially chip in wherever we could. And I had a wonderful experience on the task force. Dr. Williams, she was actually one of the co-chairs on the task force. And it sort of mushroomed from there. And I said, you know what? What could I do to really continue to give back to the association? So I did my research, and here I am.
Okay, that is very noble, which is something that is inherent in the profession. I think over the years, doctors have gotten a very bad rap, and I'm going to be very frank here, where people actually think that doctors get into medicine for the sake of money. Well, I think that both of you can agree with me and say that certainly cannot be the case for the vast majority of doctors. I think in Absolutely. Any profession, in any profession, you cannot last in a profession if you were not called to that profession. And that is the truth. If you don't have a heart for what you do, you're not going to do it well, and you're not going to last in the profession. Because challenges do come. There are things which will crop up in the road. Can you guys discuss, either one of you, whichever prefers to take the question, some of the challenges that you foresee, or some of the challenges that you've had up to this point, even being members of BAMP before you were president and first vice president? Any challenges that you might have had that might have spurred on your decision to become president and vice president? And how do you plan in the future to deal with these challenges?
I'll go first. Sure. Well, the role of president, as you can imagine, is an enormous one. And as you quite rightly said, one of the issues that we must address has been a challenge in society for quite some time is the perception of how the sisters are perceived in the society. And that is something that I want to address from the very beginning. We need to repair our relationship with speaking to the public and really getting our message out there that medicine, the life of medicine is not an easy one. It actually calls for great sacrifice. Of course, there have been people who have done things over the years that may be less scrupulous than others, but most part, as you quite rightly said, for the most part, doctors go above and beyond what we are called to do for the sake of patients. And it is that calling to a higher aspiration to do this to help people to really make a meaningful contribution to the society that most of us would have signed on to practice medicine in order to do. And so we want to restore that image in society that medicine is really about helping and caring and doing the best that we can to uplift the society as a whole. We make our contribution through health. We do not belittle anyone else's contribution in the society. We all play a vital role. And I think one of the things that has happened over the years is that people have come to think that doctors think of themselves as having a more important role. But each cog in the wheel, especially in this COVID-19 pandemic, has taught us that we all need each other, right? We're all essential, you understand, in some way to making society at large to continue. And even within the health profession, doctors, we are part of a team. We cannot function without nurses. We cannot function without EMTs. We cannot function without administration. We are part of the whole. So recognizing that we've had a distortion of the image of the medical profession, that is one of the things that I personally want to address, because it is a noble profession and it requires people to go outside of themselves to give beyond what they have been trained to do.
Yeah, and essentially, that is the definition of an essential worker, somebody that you really cannot do without. And we are not going to sugarcoat anything here. There are doctors who really do believe that they're God's gift to the earth. However, they're not the vast majority. They're not the vast majority of doctors. No. Many of the persons who are doctors don't use their titles outside of work, for example. Or they don't walk around with their stethoscopes around their necks and they don't speak in the bank, "Hi, this is Dr. Whomever." That's not the vast majority of us. Many of us are unassuming, regular, everyday people who work very hard, who hurt just like the average person in society.
Absolutely.
Hurts.
Absolutely.
We get sick like other people. We have relatives who die like other people. And believe it or not, we wait in accident and emergency as well.
Like everyone else.
So whilst there might be times where a colleague might be able to, if he or she's not too busy and out of respect for the profession, because it's done in other professions. So don't get it wrong. It's done in other professions. We sit down and wait 4 hours in accident and emergency like other persons, but we understand that in accident and emergency, waiting is a feature of the unit, because 1 minute it could look empty and in 2 seconds an emergency comes in and that's the end of the calm and quiet for several hours.
Absolutely.
Any challenges that you foresee, Adana?
I just piggybacking essentially off of Linda. I mean, growing up, for instance, I always heard persons like in my grandmother's age group and my mom's age group would often say, you know, they would go to the doctor and say, "Doc, whatever you think is best, you know, I'll follow your instruction." And I think there really has been, to a certain extent, a breakdown in the communication between doctors and the general public. And I think that we need to really try to aim to get back there to really ensure that we have a relationship with the general public, that they feel comfortable to sit down and access anything. That if they don't understand something about their medication or condition, they could easily say, "You know what, Doc, can you please go over this here with me?" And I think that has sort of fallen by the wayside. And I think that for both Linda and I, we are both very passionate about it. Yes, in this COVID-19 time, we would be constantly faced with changes in research, changes in the data, which we would have to adapt to. And that is an ever-moving feature of the field that we're in. And I think that once having the right attitude and the expertise within our groups, because we have a lot of experts within the various subspecialties of medicine in Barbados, I think that we can get through it.
Going on what you had just said, Adana, back in the earlier days in medicine, it was what we called the paternalistic relationship, where, like you said, the persons would say to the doctor, you know, whatever you say is right, I'll do whatever you say to do. Now we've moved towards a more intelligent, a more well-informed patient. Absolutely. And we are trying to do the patient-centered model where decisions are made with the patient at the core. Absolutely. And this can present some sort of a challenge because patients are going on the internet, for example, and they're looking up information. And one of the things that some persons don't realize is that you still do need a fund of knowledge, a background of knowledge upon which to read and come to different decisions and diagnoses. So simply because you read something on the internet, that doesn't mean that your symptoms match up with this particular disease. Do you see the role of the doctor disappearing with time? And we're going to talk about COVID because that's something that we definitely will discuss. But let's talk about the role of the doctor. Let's talk about the grand things like telemedicine and automated medical practices.
No, I don't think the role of the doctor is disappearing. I think it's changing. And if we look all the way back to the ancient Greeks and we examine the practice of medicine, it has always been there in one form or another. What has happened in what we call modern medicine is that we've sort of divorced the practice of medicine, as you said, from being patient-centered to being paternalistic. And now we realize that, and we're going back to the listening role. We're going back to listening to what people are saying, both by their verbal and their nonverbal communication. So as a profession, we have to get back to hearing what people say in a more detailed way. And the reason why this is really important is because, as you said, there is more information available to people, and they're going to come with bigger challenges about that information and challenge us and challenge our position. But also, we also have the alternative medical practitioners who are, you know, very adept at listening and so on and so forth. And although we call it, you know, I'm all for that which is complementary to medicine. I'm nothing against that. But I think when we start to go to some of the alternative practices, that's where patients say, well, you know, my doctor doesn't listen to me, but this person over here listens to me better. And I think that one of the challenges that we have going forward as a group is how we're going to deal with that. Doctors are not going to become irrelevant, because no matter how much you go on Google, and I always tell my patients, it's a case of synthesis, right? I usually use an example that if you were going to buy a plot of land next door to your house and there was some problem with the boundary line, you would not go on the internet and Google the law, right? To go to represent yourself in court to the judge. You would not do it because you would say to yourself, well, although I could get all the information, I cannot synthesize it in a way to present my case. Well, similarly with medicine, there is a lot to take in and weigh and balance. And it's not just a matter of necessarily the facts on the page. Each fact must be weighed against the patient. And so that is one of the breakdowns that I talked about in communication. We must communicate better, respect what the patient knows, and understand what it is that they need to understand in order to make the best and the most informed decision that they can make about their health and their care.
And not only that, Linda, I think also there's a role for the internet for patients, let's say, to do preliminary reading. However, I don't think that doctors should sort of disband the use of the internet. However, there are some trusted internet resources that we can direct patients to. There are a lot of other resources out there that aren't trusted that have some very questionable information as it relates to medical illnesses and conditions. But with the correct direction, that's what we should be, you know, we should be a guide. We're the ones who went to school, who we learned this information. We spent hours upon hours.
Sometimes
some nights not sleeping, you know, trying to synthesize this information. And so in these very difficult waters, we are here to guide you. And it's really not a situation where the doctor would the role of the doctor would be completely lost, but to actually marry technology now with the actual role of the physical doctor.
Well, we have a call. Greston, that call still there? Let's take that call.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Yes, my name is Victor Young. And I would say to a lot of patients or people who are coming to doctors that they should be interested in their self first, not wait till they are actually out. Tend to think that the doctor can rebuild them. A doctor can only advise you, and you should be able to take the advice from the doctor. And I can say doctors are really hurt, especially when they lose a patient. My daughter's a doctor, and sometimes I'm so worried when she loses a patient. I can see it in her. She is so worked up. I mean, if it was possible, I would not even want her to go into that field. So when people are talking about doctors don't care, it's a bare joke. They do care. So you can't put the blame on all. But the first thing that patients have to do is to be concerned about their own health first, to realize that it is their body. It is not the doctor's body. You would wait then for a doctor to tell you you shouldn't drink alcohol. Then you would be saying, well, the doctors want to drink and smoke up more than me. What's the sense going to a doctor? The same way you would take care of your car, you should take care of your body. When you come to the doctor, you're coming to get advice. So I'm very, as I said, concerned when I hear people talk about doctors. Everybody in every profession, whether it's the police department, the fire department, any profession, you will get the odd person. But it isn't in all cases that you can blame one with the same branch. And I am glad to hear that you all are very passionate about what you're speaking about.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I do remember a few years ago, I had said that a person needs to be invested in his or her own health. There is only so much that can be done externally by a doctor, by a nurse, by an EMT, by the physiotherapist. There's only so much. Our roles are limited. The patient must be his or her own advocate. You must, this is your health, this is your body, this is your life. If you're not interested in it, we are not miracle workers. We do not have the power to give life. We do not have the power to take life. Back in 2019, you're still there, Mr. Young, but we really want to thank you for that vote of confidence because we didn't want it to sound as though we are here on air trying to glorify medicine at all. So thank you that you are on the outside, well, sort of, because your doctor is a doctor, but you understand somebody that sees.
Well, and I think, understand, that's right, because I have to take care of my body.
Correct. Nobody else can. So thank you so much for joining us and keep listening.
Thank you.
So last year, when everybody was supposedly, well, I was about to ask a question, but let's take this call.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Thank you. I can safely say this because I had a recent experience. It's not only about the medical aspect of it. It's also being able to comfort the person with whom you're dealing with. I had that experience recently. I won't call her name, but she was a very young doctor, LML, And just the way she spoke to you would have taken your mind away from the problem and put you at ease. That's also a very important aspect of the profession. So it's not only just about medicine. It's a lot more than that. And you don't like to lose anyone, but sometimes there are things that you don't have any control over. Sometimes it happens that way, and it affects those people. So I have two daughters who are doctors, obviously. I have a brother who's a doctor. And I know, I see the impact when something goes wrong that they have on them. And a lot of things can be avoided if people would just do the right thing, rather than keep on doing the wrong things and then when there's no hope. The doctor, I have always said, and I would always say, I don't care who take offense to it. Anyone who smokes a cigarette is an idiot. Right? And it is even more dangerous to those who don't smoke. That's caused cigarette smoke. And I often wonder, why produce a product that is destroying millions of lives every day? In the interest of what? Money? Is it really worth it? Have a nice evening.
Well, thank you very much for calling in, sir. And I take this opportunity to remind us all that the Minister of Health advises that smoking is harmful to the health of the person who smokes, as well as those persons who are nearby. And we are sorry for your loss. And we really, truly are glad that there was somebody in the profession who was able to guide you through what seemed to be a challenging time. So we want to talk about the elephant in the room, as it were. We are going to discuss COVID-19. Last year, some people were in church getting ready for New Year's Day to find them in church. Other persons were watching fireworks. And there were other people on the other side of the world battling for their lives with a new, unknown, never heard of, never seen disease, which has taken the world by storm. It has changed the world as we know it. And the world as we know it is not going to go back. It's not going to go back. Every facet of life has been changed. One of the things that I am proud of as a Barbadian, and most people that know me know that I'm very patriotic. I get annoyed when people don't stand at attention when the anthem is playing. Right? That's just me. But I really do want to offer congratulations from looking on from the outside at how the situation has been managed. And I can only speak about health. Well, I can speak as a citizen as well, that generally speaking, I thought that it was well managed. This isn't political. Let me say that from the outset. But the committee that Linda was co-chair on, again, Dr. Williams, I think it was well managed, a job well done. In every facet of life, things will go wrong. There will be friction and so on. But overall, I think the management was a good job. And from every situation, you learn from mistakes that might have been made. You see what was done right and you continue to do it. You improve on that and you see what was done wrong and you make an effort to change it so that the overall effect is a benefit for all those who are involved. Let's talk about some of the challenges that arose out of COVID-19, some of the things that had to be put in place, and where do we go as a nation from here? So I leave that discussion open. We'll start with you, Linda, as you were the co-chair, one of the co-chair for the COVID-19.
Right. Thank you. The 31st of December 2019 is when the Chinese government informed the World Health Organization of a novel coronavirus that was causing pneumonia. And our lives have changed. The practice of medicine has changed across the world as this new coronavirus spread across the world, which we call SARS-CoV and its disease caused by it, COVID-19. As that has spread across the world, we learned a lot of things in a very short space of time. Our response to it here in Barbados, as you quite rightly pointed out, has been a good and robust response taken seriously by our government, but especially by our people, right, who understood the serious seriousness of the matter and complied for the most part with the public health practices. BAMP, as has been done in the past before, formed a task force to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic and to work together with those doctors who work in the Ministry of Health and Wellness, who are really, really working extremely hard behind the scenes to manage the pandemic. But we didn't always know everything at once. So you would have heard at first there was we didn't have to wear a mask, and then it changed, and then it was highly suggested that you wear masks, and at first we only knew that it was droplet infection, and then we learned that there were ways that the virus could be spread in the air in certain circumstances, which we call aerosolization, etc. So as time evolves, we learn more and more about the virus, about its transmission, about its infectivity, etc. But one thing that is in common all across the world from the very first whistleblowers about this pandemic were the doctors. They were on the front lines everywhere, doctors and nurses and healthcare workers on the front lines everywhere, each one essential. You see them dressed up in their PPE, putting on those gowns is not easy, taking them off is not easy. It is it's a whole process in itself.
And it's hot.
Yes. And you have to have courage to go forth to fight something that you can't see, you don't know where it is, and you just have to take constant precautions. Having said that, medicine is full of different times when we face pandemics like this. This is not the first pandemic that the world has faced, and this is not the first time that doctors have been called upon to face something that's evolving, that we knew little about. You know, there was a BAMP task force also on HIV/AIDS when it first came, when we knew little about it and we were trying to learn about it as time goes on. And in the same way, we have responded, helping to put protocols in place, trying to work together to speak to some of the changes that occur in society that have had to occur. One of the major changes that occurred is how you enter doctors' offices and how you interact with the medical facilities. You would have heard notices going out about people who are asthmatic and changes that had to occur with how they manage their asthma. But also you will see in many places about if you have an elevated temperature or if you have symptoms of cough and so on. So we ask you instead to call a hotline instead of presenting to your doctor's offices. Doctors had to make a switch quickly to not seeing patients in person. We had to learn, those of us who were not IT nimble, had to grasp quickly how to do telemedicine and how to have consults with persons in a virtual space. For us in Barbados, that has not been a prolonged thing because, as you can see, we have relaxed and some of the protocols now, and you can go to your doctor's office as long as you don't have those symptoms. But telemedicine is going to be a part ongoing of the way in which we practice medicine. We always will have to have that fallback position where going into the office has to be weighed, you know, with each patient, the risk has to be weighed. And wherever possible, and we can do remote consults, we do them. But of course, there will be instances where that is not possible and where you will have to go and see people. And that's where we as doctors need to protect ourselves with protective equipment and go forth and do what we need to do for the patients. In-hospital doctors have also had lots of challenges. We now have an abundance of PPE. We now have lots of protocols within the hospital. But in the early days, you know, there was having to work all those things out one by one so that everybody could continue to give the best possible care to the patients. And I think QEH is doing the best job that it can and has worked out many of the early challenges.
Okay, so we know that BAMP formed a task force. We rose to the challenge. Adana, what are you seeing in the country as some of the biggest challenges to the progress that we would have made as a nation with respect to COVID-19?
Well, I think probably it's not just unique to Barbados, first of all. I think it's a challenge that every doctor, every healthcare personnel will face internationally. And that is that it is a constantly evolving space. And it requires for you to be constantly on your toes every single time and adapting. And I think that that is the take home point that COVID has taught everyone to adapt, including doctors. And some of the challenges that we have had so far is sometimes, quite honestly, not getting it right the first time around. But being able to be nimble, as Linda said, to adapt, to ensure that we mitigate any further risk and putting persons at the forefront to ensure that we limit their risk that they're having. In terms of other limitations that we've had, telecom initially would have been quite a challenge because a lot of the telemedicine platforms are not here locally. So getting them set up, getting doctors au fait with the actual platforms has been a bit of a challenge to ensure also the safety and the confidentiality of patient information is still maintained. So those are some of the things that I believe that we will still have as a challenge. As we continue to reopen the country, again, we will be forced to continue to adapt and evolve as things are quite fluid in terms of the listing or the categorization of countries moving from low risk to medium risk to high risk. And I think that we need to continue to stay at the forefront, continue to monitor and work with the Ministry of Health so that all doctors can come together and weigh in on such a matter.
Linda had just mentioned about the masks. And one of the things that I said, I was walking somewhere and I thought to myself, wow, this is what the world has come to, where we have to walk around with masks, or it's strongly advised that we walk around with masks. But one of the things that has been very concerning for me is the number of chins and ears and foreheads that are definitely not going to get COVID.
True. Very, very true.
They're very well protected from whatever might be going around, but the necessary nose and mouth, they're wide open. And it's an alarming number of persons that you see on a day-to-day basis who still are wearing masks incorrectly. So take this opportunity to go through how you correctly put a mask on and how you take the mask off.
So firstly, I'm
going to giving it to you then.
So firstly, you want to ensure that your hands are clean. Okay. That's step number one. You need to make sure your hands are clean. Once your hands are clean, and if you can't physically wash your hands, then you need to sanitize your hands to make sure that you are not actually transferring any particulates or bacteria into your face. Then you take your mask, you want to make sure and hold it by your ear strings. Or if you actually have tie loops to the back, you want to make sure and hold it by your ear loops or your ear strings and actually attach the mask onto your face, ensuring to cover your nose and your mouth. It's important. You can't put on a mask that's too small for you, and certainly you can't wear a mask that's too big. If, for instance, you can place your hand through the side of your mask and touch your lips, it's too big. If your nose is coming out of the mask, or as you breathe or as you walk, your lips are coming out of your mask, again, it's too small. So you have to ensure that your mask is fitting you adequately. Once you've secured your mask, there are some masks that actually come over the nose. For instance, healthcare professionals or surgical masks actually have in a metal wire. And you want to make sure that that is actually correctly affixed around the nose to make sure you have a nice secure fit. And when you leave your area and you get home, you take off your mask in the exact opposite way that you put it on. Don't touch the face of the mask. Don't touch the area over the mouth and the lips and the nose. And again, wash your hands.
I wish that you had the opportunity to see Dr. Grandison's face as she was discussing it. Very passionate and animated. We have a call, so we're going to take that call.
Yes, we do have a call. And we also have a comment and a question via the WhatsApp. So we'll take the call.
Let's take the call first and then we'll come back
to that. All right. Good evening.
Hi, good evening to all the presenters. I'm enjoying the show, first of all.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. What I really want to say, because I've heard this whole concept of telemedicine, being brought up on the BBC especially, and everybody's pretty gung-ho about it. Now, let me just put a disclaimer here. I'm not a Luddite. I'm all pro-technology, but I'm just wondering, you know, because sometimes hindsight ends up being 20/20. In terms of things like domestic abuse or maybe incest or so on, I know in a human interpersonal level, there are certain things that a doctor can pick up in a face-to-face encounter that they would never be able to pick up or would not elicit from a patient in the comparatively colder atmosphere of an on-screen interaction. You know, there are certain nonverbal cues that you might pick up, especially with a young person or, I mean, our news today is about trafficking and so on. So I'm wondering if any aspect of that is being factored in, because sometimes you tend to go with the technology and the baby gets splashed out with the bathwater. So there are people that would always be considered vulnerable in our society that we need to give a little bit of thought to when we're going forward with certain things. Because even if, as I'm just saying, in a home atmosphere where somebody's sitting in a room telling you what their ostensible problem is, you don't know who is off camera monitoring their conversation and so on. And so there are those factors that I think we really, especially as females, need to be careful of in our regrettably unchanged world, where a lot can, you know, slip through the cracks when we're thinking, okay, we're doing this brave new thing of telemedicine, but what vital, real information are we getting that we can deal with the person's substantive problem? I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Thank you. Can I answer that, Renee?
Go right ahead, Linda.
Right. I thank the caller because it is one of my concerns also, and what I want to say is that medicine is not just the practice of finding the physical disease. In fact, the, you know, WHO definition of health is the complete state, physical, holistic, emotional, yeah, mental, psychological, the holistic person. And of course, when we're talking about telemedicine, we tend to talk a little bit more as if it's just a physical, you tell me what's wrong, I tell you what to do, that kind of thing.
All right.
But telemedicine is actually being used quite effectively with those who practice psychiatry, mm-hmm, and who look at the aspects of mental health. Now, you're quite right. There are lots of cues, mm-hmm, that you pick up from body language. And yeah, I often say that I only get a third of what the, mm-hmm, patient is saying from what they actually say.
Exactly.
Right? Because a lot of what they say is non-verbally communicated.
Right, and it's elicited by how you come over to them, you know?
Right.
Sometimes they might not
intend
to say, but if you act sympathetic, they might divulge more, you know, than come over in other circumstances.
And that is why medicine is an art, okay? It's not just a practice. Take this, do that, da-da-da-da-da-da. And that's what we want to restore, the art of medicine. But at the same time, you have to recognize if we were in a situation in the country where, for example, there was widespread community spread, God forbid, I hope it never happens, but let us just say that was a situation where we had widespread community spread. You are correct. It is not every case that is appropriate for telemedicine. But you have to know for which case you're going to gown up or put on your face shields and so on and go into the office and have that interaction. Because as you quite rightly said, there's always the prospect of someone being in the room that you can't see or someone who is monitoring the conversation of the person who's speaking. But by and large, part of the new challenge that we have as doctors is to figure out which cases we can see by telemedicine, right, and how to carry it forward in that.
Right,
and I can say how to allocate our resources. I'm not the expert on telemedicine. I am in the learning curve, the learning curve. And every day we learn a little bit more about how to use these virtual platforms, but it's not appropriate in many types of cases.
Right. I just wanted to bring that intervention because I said I listened to BBC and it seems to be like we're on the cusp of it. And I said, fine, it's good. I quite get what it can do. I mean, for example, we've heard even before now of like doctors teaching or maybe facilitating an operation via telemedicine to their to the colleagues who may not know as much as they do technically. So we all know that it can work. But I'm just saying, you know, you really need, because something that really struck me, even with the whole COVID situation, I found ridiculously unfortunate, was this thing about how the abuse cases went up with people being home with their abusers, and this whole ridiculous. I still find it weird to even say that they had people that had to, these really novel, talk about a novel virus, ways of intervening whereby if somebody was being abused and they could not say it on the phone because they were afraid of being heard, somebody else had this nice little idea on, I think it was on Twitter, whereby they would pretend to call and do, maybe speak in a coded way about lipstick and if the person knows what to ask. And I'm thinking, this is 21st century, and you can't even pick up a phone and say, well, you know, call 911 for me or whatever. You have to say something about lipstick and if it's red or whatever. It's humanity is progressing, but a lot of the ways of interacting, unfortunately, aren't. And when we, you know, news is supposed to be positive and we're supposed to push all the innovations, but at a baseline, I think we need to look at the headlines in everybody's newspaper across the globe and see that we are still living, a little bit of us in the caves, yeah? So we should always tend to remember that when we are pushing the brave new world, that the cave persons, I wouldn't say man behavior, is still there. We need to balance those two realities, okay? So that's my contribution. Have a good evening, ladies.
Thank you so much. Kristen, let's take the question and the comment.
Yes, I will do that for you. In fact, I would have done it right now if we had not another call waiting for you.
Let's take the call and then... Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Yeah, good evening. I am responding to the mask thing because I'm very concerned about it. And I think that it should be made mandatory that when you're out in public, you should be wearing a mask. I see a lot of people wearing the mask with barely covering the mouth and that kind of thing. It's not only protecting you, it's protecting me from you. Right? And I'm very, very concerned about it. And I think the authorities have to get very tough, because if this thing is allowed to continue, this thing can go away. It is not going to go away. I think in Dubai, you're out in public for the mask, you're either fined or jail or both. I would like to stamp that, but as it comes to that, to protect people, I have no problem with it. Also, in the paper, in last Friday's paper, in the center pages, we saw a whole crowd at a fact. Not one had on a mask. Now, those people are not going to remain at the location. They're going to go home to the families or whoever. And then, oh God, it can easily, people need to be, I don't know. I would like it to end, but what I'm seeing being displayed, sorry, no, it's never going to end. That's it.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much for your concern. And I'm sure that that is the concern of many people, doctors and non-doctors alike, who see people who are blatantly, but it, like you said, it is not law, it is not mandatory. It is still under the category of strongly advised. Am I correct, Dr. Williams?
Correct. It is not mandatory. It is not legislated. But one of the concerns we have, especially the task force has put forward and in our new recommendations for tourism and reopening of the economy, we have said that we think that the relaxation of some of the rules has been a little fast. In that we've moved from, you know, gatherings of 10 to 250 and now 500, and then we suspend it for certain days. But we can gather if people still use the practices that were instituted in the first place and use those public health practices in a safe and wise way. But we still think that the maximum gatherings at this time should be about 250. But with all of the other things in place, hand sanitization, social distancing, face masks, etc. So I agree with the gentleman. He's one that gets it. You know, you go about the place, you see lots of people associating without masks, and it makes you think, well, what happens if even one case gets away in there? But then there are the other group of people who say, I can't wear a mask, doc. if I wear a mask, I feel like I choke in. And I've heard lots of different things. And I appreciate that there are people who do get anxiety from wearing masks. And that's something that we have to speak to as well. As doctors, we have to speak to people who have anxiety about wearing masks. There are different types of masks. You can wear the surgical masks, which are lighter, right? You can wear the ones with the blue ones with the air loops, which don't feel as dense. Some of the cloth masks, I agree, sometimes people make them too thick and it can feel as if you're not breathing properly. But I don't think that anyone should quite rightly say, I can't wear a mask, because as doctors in operations, in surgery and in sterile procedures in hospital, we wear masks all day and sometimes for many multiple hours in a day. It does not cut off your air. It does not reduce your oxygenation. It does not make your heart rate go up. I've heard lots of different things. And the truth is masks are not new. Okay. It's just that the requirement for everyone to wear one is new, but masks themselves are not new.
Not to mention, especially now during this Sahara dust period as well, there's an additional benefit to the mask. So they can also be encouraged to use the mask as they should.
Okay, we have to take another caller, is Gregson?
Yes, we have a caller. Good evening, caller. You're still there with us?
Yeah, peace be unto you and yours.
All right.
Your guest. I have two questions. First, you were speaking about surgical masks. Before COVID, you could buy a box of masks for less than $50. Now you have to pay $150 and even more for a box of masks. So the average Belgian can't afford the surgical mask. But what I'm saying is that you should wear a mask. But you know when people will really take heed, and I don't want it to happen here. When something happened to one of the family, or if you see that we had to have a wear, but I wouldn't like it because we depend on tourism and I don't want it at all. But I need to hear. If all you got to do is if you don't want to wear it, you're driving, when you get to where you're going, wear it. I guess it won't be in the place for hours. When you come out, you can take it off. I travel even with more than one. If I have to go to the hospital, you know, you have to wear it long. I carry two, I change one. I wait for about 2 hours or so, and I change it. If I finish before the 2 hours, well, I leave it on. But my second point is, I have a medical question. There's a friend of mine who have shingles. I want to know if they will return again.
You said shingles?
Yeah.
Right, shingles, what happens with the virus that causes shingles actually lives in the nerves. So what you get would be flares, perhaps if the person has a fever, under stress, if they're ill, and it flares up, you get an outbreak. And then depending on whether you get a cream, if you go early enough, or if you get tablets to take by mouth, the infection or the flare, it will settle down again. And another time later on, the same thing can happen again. So
thank you because I have a cousin who I was telling her about that too, because I was asking her, you know, she's older than I am, and I was asking her about the lady, and she said that it only comes once. So I am glad the person listening to, so I'm very glad I guess they feel relieved by that also. Thank you very much. But some people saying they don't come back, but I'm glad that we get the answer now. The person, she is listening, but she's frightened to call us.
Well, we're always glad that we can help. Thank you for calling
Thank you. I listen all the time to you, Dr. Young Grayston, and never a dull moment with you all. So I'm glad of very good good information this evening. But I everybody in Barbados should hear. We see how many people every day. The count going up all the time. People should try and adhere. And if you don't have to go outside, don't go outside. But what can you do? You can just talk.
We will keep trying.
Have a good evening, and everybody stay safe.
Thank you.
You too.
Thank you, ma'am.
Let's try to take in one WhatsApp, Redston.
Oh, I'll tell you what, though. We've got two callers here waiting. You know, they come with the numbers at the end of the show. Let me see if we can get both of them in together. Callers, if you can hear me, please stand by. We'll let you speak to the doctor in a second, but I just want to take care of these WhatsApps here first. This one says, I think places should be made available to go and smoke. instead of allowing persons to smoke in open places, but I think smoking is already illegal in open places. Anyhow, destroying other people's atmosphere. A fee could be put in place for the upkeep of these places for people to go and smoke. That's a WhatsApp from one person. And the other one is a question. Let me see if I can find it for you. It says, good evening. A question for the docs. Traditionally, BAMP leaders have been older doctors. Any specific plans to engage the younger doctors? Many of the doctors on the front lines treating COVID-19 patients were the younger generation. Are they involved in BAMP? That's a question for the doctors. And then when we finished there, we got two callers on the line with limited time. So go ahead, Doc.
Yeah, we're in our last 5 minutes, and I can say that this new BAMP committee is made up vastly of younger persons, and we are not, well, I say we, but the association is not getting rid of the older persons. They have a wealth of knowledge. They've walked this way before. They've led before. So it would be remiss of us if we said, you know, we need young people and we don't want anything to do with the older people. That would be foolhardy. But definitely this committee is made up of a younger set of doctors.
I would want to say, Renee, to add in there, that we want to cover doctors at every stage of their career.
Agreed.
And we must appeal to both the older, even the retired doctors, and have a place for them to contribute to the profession. But one of our thrusts right now is to get the young doctors involved, to get them to see what it means to be a medical professional, so that they can learn from others about the ethics of the profession. They can learn from others about the role of the doctor in society, so that they can learn how to advocate for health, and so that they can gain knowledge from being in the company of the ones who have gone on before them. So there's a great benefit to professional association. And that is why we have a drive for the junior doctors now to come in. And we're going to do everything within our power to be able to communicate with them in the way that they want to communicate, and to be able to reach them in a shorter time as possible. I'll let one of the younger doctors, much younger than me, Dr. Grandison, speak to that quickly.
Yes, certainly. One of the challenges, and I would admit to it, I was one of the younger doctors who initially, you know, thought that, maybe BAMP probably wasn't for me. And I learned, especially during the COVID-19 time, especially after seeing the passion that Linda had on the task force, that they actually do care about younger doctors, and certainly her vision, and I completely support it, is to encourage young doctors, and also not just to encourage them to join, but also encourage them to act and encourage them to partner with the older doctors, so that together we are not seen as younger doctors versus older doctors, but we are just seen as one big medical community. And we have looked into membership in terms of making it more affordable for doctors, especially during this COVID-19 time, and also looking at a way of trying to stratify and make sure that all of the doctors have their interests heard. And that's what we are going to try to achieve this year. And I think that we will get it done.
All right.
The entire task force, they're all passionate.
Before you run away, I still got the two callers there waiting. Hope they're still there. But this last comment says, one of the side effects of wearing the mask is that there seems to be less cold and flu going around. I don't know the last day anyone I know had a cold. Anyhow, let's go to the line quickly. Good evening, Bed Health Radio Show. Hi.
Hi, good evening to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Good evening.
Yeah, this is for the doctors.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, those cloth masks should be changed within 4 hours. I use 3 masks every day. Them is the one for $2, the blue mask. When I get it to work, I change it. Then within 4 hours, I change my mask. But I see some people wearing those cloth masks the whole day. You should be wearing those cloth masks the whole day. You should be changing them within 4 hours. Or even if you're getting off the van, when you get into work, change your mask. What do you have to say about that?
We all agree. Correct.
Hello?
You're absolutely correct, madam. You're absolutely correct. They should not be worn the whole day. You should change your mask, especially as how Dr. Grandison was trying to explain just now, it's essential that you sanitize your hands, you take off your mask, et cetera, et cetera. We recognize the challenges some people have. One of the issues that with making it mandatory at first was that everybody didn't have access to masks. I think the price of masks have come down somewhat now. I heard someone quote hundreds of dollars for a box, but I know that you can actually get a box for under $100 in some places. And I think that because masks are more accessible now, and certainly cloth masks are more accessible now, fashionable, because you know, matching your mask to your outfit, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That you should have quite a few, build up a store of masks and wash mm-hmm. them often and care for them so that you can change them. As you quite rightly said, shouldn't go from the bus to your workplace to your neighbor's house, et cetera, et cetera. And if you have the potential to change that mask often, then you reduce the risk of transmission. Because remember, the transmission is on the outside of the mask if you had encountered someone with COVID.
And certainly if the mask gets wet because mm-hmm. you're sweating, you definitely need to change your mask.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
I was hoping that the other caller did not disappear, but apparently that person has gone. So that's it in terms of the telephone calls, Doc. So over to you.
Linda, Dr. Linda Williams, who is the current president of BAP, and Dr. Dana Grandison, who is the first vice president. I wish to take this opportunity again to wish you and your committee the best of success as you help us to journey through this very challenging and uncertain time. I wish you all of the success, God's blessings, and we look forward to having another show next week. Thank you, ladies, for joining me, because as you might have heard, elections were only last week, Saturday, and they readily agreed, which is the nature of doctors, readily agreed. So thank you, ladies, very, very much. Thank you for coming, and we know that we'll be hearing more from you as time goes on.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
No problem at all. Gretchen, I wish you a wonderful evening as well. I am going to run off. This has been the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. Next week, we have a very exciting show for you. And as usual, it will be a surprise.
All right, Doctor. And your two guests, Dr. Williams, and the other guest was
Dr. Grandison.
Thank you both. And all three of you have a wonderful, wonderful week ahead. All right.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye. All right. Take care. That was, of course, the Better Health Radio Show right here on the Voice of Barbados 92.9 FM.